This is a Defocus Media production.
All we're going to do is glasses and eyes, and that's it. Yeah. But that's not going to be the future. And I learned that very quickly, like, you know, about 5 or 10 years ago. Hey, that's not the way we're going to go. You have to specialize. You have to find a niche. Find something that you love, find your niche, and, you know, charge for your services. Because if you're going to be doing eye exams, just regular eye exams, or, you know, what makes you different from someone else?
How's it going, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the 2020 podcast, bringing clarity to business, entrepreneurship, and life. I am your host, Dr. Harbir Sayan. Thank you again, as always, for taking the time to join me here to learn and to grow. I truly, truly appreciate your presence and your support, guys. If you haven't already, please do subscribe. You can subscribe on YouTube if you like to watch, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, and follow along on Spotify as well. And make sure you leave a review, leave a comment, let me know what you think. Tell me which guests you love. Tell me which content you love so I know which guests to bring on. I like to bring on people who can help inspire us and motivate us to grow and to do more, no matter what profession you happen to be in. And today's guest is an excellent example of that within the optometry field. His name is Dr. Sherman Tung, who is an optometrist here in Vancouver in the beautiful Kerrisdale neighborhood. He has a residency, he has completed a residency in ocular disease and also a fellowship in myopia management. His practice is called iLab and is a pediatric specialty practice. And Sherman himself spends a lot of time in myopia management. So we're going to dig into myopia management today, learn a lot about Sherman's different practices, different techniques, and also we'll learn a little bit about the business side of things. What does it take to start a specialty practice? Is that a good decision to make? And a lot of Sherman's insights actually go back to his experience within our association. Sherman is former president of the BC Doctors of Optometry, another pretty amazing title and amazing amount of experience that he has within the association and networking across the country, across North America. And he's applying a lot of those lessons to his practice now. So really an incredible person to learn from. Before we go into the episode, I want to thank our sponsor, which is Hoya Vision Care Canada. Hoya has the new MyoSmart lens, which is an incredible new technology for us as optometrists to offer our young myopic patients. The MyoSmart lens employs the new patented DIMS technology to help slow down the progression of myopia. In a 2-year clinical study, it was shown the MyoSmart lens decreased myopic progression by 59% and axial elongation by 60%. To learn more about the MyoSmart lens, check out Hoya.ca or, of course, reach out to your local Hoya rep. And without further ado, here is the episode with Dr. Sherman Tung. And of course, stay tuned for more exciting episodes coming soon. Thanks a lot, guys. We'll talk to you soon. Okay, guys, here we are with Dr. Sherman Tung. Dr. Tung, thank you so much for taking the time and staying late in your practice to participate in this interview tonight. Thank you so much.
No problem. My pleasure.
So let's start with, you know, I gave a brief intro to you in the intro to the podcast, but I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about what you do, you know, where you practice, what your life is like kind of day to day.
Kind of tell you a little bit more about myself. I actually graduated from UBC, so born and raised in Vancouver. Then I did my schooling in Chicago. After Chicago ICO, I did another residency, so in ocular disease. So that's where I was going towards, ocular disease, and then I get bored easily. So I came back. I worked for, you know, corporate, and then I got bored of that. Then I did my own private practice. So I opened it with a partner, and then I got bored. Then I joined the association. We can talk a little bit more about that later. And then so now I kind of have a feeling what I like to do is pediatric optometry. So I just opened another clinic, just specializes mostly in pediatric eye care. So that's kind of a little bit about me.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Some people get bored and they just sit on the couch and watch reruns of shows and eat chips. You get bored and you're like, let me do even bigger. Let me go even bigger every time. That's pretty cool. So I wanted to, you know, we're definitely going to talk about the practice. We're going to talk about pediatric optometry, myopia control, that type of stuff. But I want to rewind and go to the you know, you were former president of the BC Doctors of Optometry. I'd love for you to share with me what your path was like. How did you get involved, and then what led you to become the president of the association?
Okay.
How much time do we have, Rick?
I think this is how it all started. I think one of the things that I was a little bit upset at that time was I didn't know what my association did for me. Like, why am I paying all these dues? And I have no idea. So before I quit anything, I always want to figure out, you know, I want to find out why I'm quitting and have a good reason before I quit. So I actually joined the membership committee and to learn more about what does BCAO do for us.
I think you and I were on that committee together, actually.
Yes.
Because I was on that committee.
Yeah, when we recruited you after when I moved up to the next level. So I learned about it, and I didn't have the stuff that I didn't know what they do for us. Like, they advocate for us, you know, they have so much resources, like all the networking. It's because I was a new grad and I never had, was tapped into that. I didn't understand what they did. And I think one of the reasons why during my time when I finished graduating is that there were more, back then there was more Canadians that graduated from Waterloo than from American schools at that time. So at that time, when I come back, like, everyone knew each other and I didn't really know anyone there. So that's one of the reasons why you should join the association. You can get to meet new people.
Right.
So I was learning about it, like, wow, they actually do a lot. You know, like, they, each time we have a negotiation for a contract with MSP, they go negotiate. Like, as I was getting more involved in helping each other, helping the association, I found out that they do a lot for us. And so, hey, Sherman, you've been very involved. We'd like to be a part of a board member. I was like, yeah, that's fine. 1 year term, that's fine. Hey, Sherman. And then we had this year where there was no succession planning. And they were like, okay, we need someone to really step up. And they kind of looked at me, Sherman, what do you think? I was like, no, I'm not ready. No way. But somehow I was like, fine, if I get elected again, maybe I'll consider it. And the next thing you know it, I was like, oh, I'm president.
Just like that.
So that's kind of my story, how I went through, you know, about to quit, to learn more about it, and then how much, you know, the association does for us. And that's why, like, I'm still, you know, part of the association. Yeah, I might not be the president anymore, but I do still part of, like, C committee and all different committees.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I know that you're still very involved, and it's always appreciated. You know what? I've been part of the association, you know, my entire career. And I know that when you were president, you know, things were going in the right direction, and people really appreciated the work you're doing. So thank you for that. Interesting, couple of interesting things there. You know, like, again, you were about to quit, and rather than just quitting flat out, like, this seems useless to me, let me actually learn about what is happening here. Maybe I'm missing something. Maybe I'm not quite seeing the full value in it. You know, why does this thing even exist if it really sucks that bad? But turns out it doesn't. It's just there's maybe a miscommunication or misunderstanding of the full capacity of what happens. I think that's really important in a lot of ways before somebody quits their job or quits their profession or whatever they might, like, just see what else is out there. You mentioned MSP. Just for the people who are listening who don't know what MSP is, that's our, oh, what's the right way of saying this? Our provincial healthcare plan, I guess you can call it. Like, you know, everybody talks about Canada having this universal healthcare. That's the sort of the part of the government that pays for certain parts of healthcare. And so our association negotiates with them to increase the fees that the government pays us for certain services that we do, just so we're on the same page about that. Yeah. So what did your job as the president entail? Like, what, okay, let's narrow that down. What was the coolest thing you did as the president?
Actually, it's actually personal growth, to be honest. Like, okay. Even though I gave a lot of time to the association, I gained a lot back just by the different meetings you have to go to, all the leadership responsibilities that you have to, you know, you have to lead by example, you have to go to these different meetings. But one cool thing that I learned a lot during the association, during these meetings, is that you meet different leaders and or forefront thinkers, like, hey, where's the profession gonna go? And you pick up on it, you listen to them. It's like, you know, at the time you might think, oh, they're crazy, why are you thinking about that? All we're gonna do is glasses and eye exam, and that's it. But that's not gonna be the future. And I learned that very quickly, like, you know, about 5 or 10 years ago, hey, that's not the way we're gonna go. You have to specialize, you have to find a niche, find something that you love, find your niche and, you know, charge for your services. Because if you're going to be doing eye exams or just regular eye exams, or, you know, what makes you different from someone else? And that's what really engaged me as a president, you know, it was the role of president. I learned a lot. What's the future going to be like? And how do you want that future to look like? And these leaders are kind of shaping it. And when you hear the industry leaders, what the industry is telling you, you know, what everyone's seeing, it gives you that different insight. So that's one of the coolest things that I learned as a president.
That is actually really cool. And I know that from being part of the association, I see that other provincial presidents come to our meetings and, you know, everybody's kind of networking and discussing things. So it makes sense you would be chatting with the kind of the foremost people and the people who are kind of cutting edge and whatnot. So you would be a good person to follow as far as, you know, what you're doing in business and what you're doing in your optometry clinic. And here you are specializing in pediatric optometry, which, you know, I don't know how many people I know who are really specializing. I know some people do VT and some people like to do myopia control, but that's like, you just do those things. You don't do the regular stuff anymore. So maybe that's something that the rest of us need to catch up on is start to really specialize and cut down into that niche that you're saying. So when is it that you decided to do the pediatric optometry? What was, because I know you kind of renovated and rebranded and everything your practice, right? What was it called before? When did you make the decision to switch over?
I used to be at another practice, and back in 2010, when we first opened that new practice, it was kind of like, hey, we're going to be your family eye care.
Right.
And that's how we started. We kind of outgrew that space, and it was great. I built had a great clientele. The problem was, it's kind of like a family GP. They're kind of doing the same thing over and over, and, you know, it wasn't getting that same satisfaction. It wasn't like, really, you know, I did enjoy optometry, but the great thing about optometry is that whatever you do, there's so many different things you can do. There's like low vision, there's VT, there's lots of different things. And one of the things that I've always really, really interested in was myopia management. But, you know, as a business mind, if you want to just open an office just for myopia management, you know, it might be a little bit hard. So I partnered with another doctor, hired as an associate. She does the VT stuff. So I see this a lot hand in hand when I see a lot of kids. It's like, hey, you know what? You need VT. And there's not a lot of VT doctors in Vancouver, like on the west side of Vancouver. So I saw a need for that. And I was getting a lot more myopia management patients. So I need a bigger space. So, hey, you know, put two to together, like let's make a pediatric office that does, you know, kids exams, VT, you know, myopia management. Most of these are geared more towards kids. So that's the reason why we kind of opened up like a pediatric office.
And it's fairly new, right? When did you guys officially open iLab?
Officially opened this year in February 2020 for 1 month.
It's perfect timing. Wow, fantastic.
You know what? There's never ever like a perfect timing, you know, anytime I, you know, you just roll with it. You know, it is what it is. We did close for 2 months, but hey, during those 2 months, I had time to study for my fellowship, which I got for
congratulations.
And then I'm also working out all the different protocols. Like I feel, you know, give us that extra time to like, hey, what are our protocols? What are our procedures? Kind of prep us for, you know, when we do open full time, you know, we have everything all in set. Like, so things will be more organized.
Yeah. What advice would you have for somebody who's kind of approaching that, maybe getting bored like you did of the kind of the family practice setting and wants to specialize? What is it that they should look for, like maybe psychologically, mentally for themselves to be prepared for it, but also what should they see in their practice that they could use as kind of landmarks to say, okay, this is a good time for me to make that leap into a specialty?
I think it really depends on what type of stage in your optometry life you are. I think if you're young, you know, within the first 10 years of your career, just go for it. Whatever you love, whatever you find, you know, just go for it. The only way you're going to learn is actually just going for it. And one of the characters of optometrists is that we don't like to take risk. Most optometrists don't like to take risk. I don't know why. But if it's within your first 10 years, just go for it. What's the worst case scenario? You can work for someone else later down the road. But if you're kind of going where you have a big patient base and you're like, hey, what am I going to start doing? then you guys start thinking about how you're going to strategize, because you can't just go cold turkey and say, I'm not seeing these patients, and you already build up these patients expecting to see you. Mm-hmm. So that's the part where you might hire another associate. You know, if you want to start dividing, you might want, let's say your optometry is called, I don't know, Eyes Vancouver. You know, you might want to branch it out like Eyes Vancouver Family, and you might want to do Eyes Vancouver Kids, or Eyes Vancouver VT, or something along those lines. So you can still have your name under that, and you can kind of branch it off, and you might want to do that if it's more than 10 years. So that's kind of like what my advice is. But you have to look at your clientele, talk to your, I think the best thing is, or one thing that I learned as a president is, most offices don't have a strategic plan. So I know it's hard, but if you can take maybe 2 or 3 days out of the whole year, kind of do a retreat and have all your staff members like, hey, what's our vision for the next 2 or 3 years? And plan it, because if you think about it, you still need your whole team to kind of buy into it. So that's something that you might want to consider, like strategic planning, like, hey, what do we want to see ourselves in 5 years? Are we happy doing the same thing what we're doing? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you are, then, you know, you might not want to do niche kind of stuff. But if it's something like, hey, I want to kind of incorporate this, then you might want to consider that.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea. Well, obviously having a plan and a vision of where you want your practice to go, but the idea of like how, if you're more established, how to slowly, you should probably slowly branch off and create that niche versus like cold turkey. Cause it would be hard to be like, oh, my practice is running so smoothly and I'm, you know, bringing all this revenue and all of a sudden stop that. And now I'm going to just try this other thing. It's hard to get that revenue or get all those patients back in the door, back in the chair again. So it makes sense to kind of ease into it. So I wanted to, you know, focus a bit on the your specific specialty, right? You see a lot of kids for myopia management, myopia control. It's a hot topic right now. The prevalence of myopia is increasing, obviously. Like, what are the, like, if you can give me kind of your main options, your main treatment options for kids that you would be seeing in your practice, what are your kind of go-tos? And are there, if you don't mind, kind of like, what would kind of help you lean towards one or the other in some, like, if there's certain criteria that you're following as well?
Wow, that's a loaded question. I'll try to summarize. For your viewers, I guess if you're like a doc, you know, like if you're an optometrist, then the best example I can give you is like glaucoma. So there's no one silver bullet that would treat your glaucoma. It's not like, okay, let's use a prostaglandin and you're done. You know, you kind of have to see what type of glaucoma you have, you know, what's your systemic, then you'll figure out drops the best thing to do, or SLT is the best thing to do, or maybe surgery if it's end stage kind of thing. Same thing with myopia. So there's different stages. So you kind of want to be aware of, you know, what's the best option for that child. But having said that, you know, the main kind of four things that are kind of in the market right now, one will be the one that I like to go to, number one, is orthokeratology, okay lenses. That's the type of lenses where you wear at nighttime. It reshapes your cornea, and then when you wake up in the morning, you can see clearly for the whole day. That's my specialty. The other one, sometimes not all children can put hard contact lens, or, you know, parents are not comfortable with that. Then you have your specialty kind of multifocal kind of design. So same like from Cooper Vision, like your MySight, that's those type of contact lenses. Each one has their pros and cons, sometimes the limitations, like what the parameters are. So you got to keep that in mind. The third one is atropine. So atropine drops. And then lastly is the newest one is from Hoya, the MyoSmart lenses. Been eyeing on that for a while. So that one is actually a pretty good lens also. So if someone can't do contact lenses or drops, you know, then glasses MyoSmart will be a good option also.
Yeah, definitely. We'll come back to the MyoSmart in a minute, because I think there's some cool things to chat about there. But what would you say, if you don't mind, just as briefly as you can, what do you think are like, or what are, not what do you think, what are the parameters or limitations of Ortho-K? Like, what patient are you fitting into Ortho-K? And which one would you put into the MySight lens? And then I have a couple of questions about atropine as well.
Okay. So for orthokeratology, it really depends on what type of lenses you're using. So it's not just one type of lens and that's it. Like within the parameters of also K, there's different treatment zones. There's different sizes you can manipulate. There's different curves you can manipulate. So in the beginning, when I first started, you know, if you use like one of those ones that are commercialized brands that you can use, they have certain parameters, usually less than 1.5 doctor still has to make sure it's with the rule, and usually anything below -5. Mm-hmm. Those are kind of your nice ideal patients. And you always want to start with like easy patient, like the -1 or -2. But as I learned through this fellowship process, like you start to customize your own lenses. And when you can customize your own lenses, then you can go up to like -8, -9, -10.
Wow.
And because of the newer designs now, back then I couldn't fit people with astigmatism. Now we can do bi-toric ortho-K lenses. And before, back then, you couldn't do anyone with more than 2 sil. Or, you know, now I can do that too now because it's different bi-toric base curves. So orthokeratology came a long, long way, but it's not very commercialized yet. So most of my lenses right now, I design them on my own, like custom make them. So that's why I can fit way higher different parameters. But if you're starting out, you know, talk to your lab, and then they'll tell you which lens they feel comfortable using, and they'll tell you what the parameters are. Start off easy first. But there's one piece of equipment that you have to buy if you start ortho-K. Like, it's like bare minimum. You have to buy a topographer. Because if you don't, you won't know how that lens sit on your eyes when they sleep.
Right.
So don't practice ortho-K if you don't have a topographer.
Basic advice. I appreciate that. Have you had much experience using the MySight lens from Cooper?
Yeah, so the MySight lens are, so for my patients that are under -1, usually I don't really fit them with ortho-K yet.
Okay,
so for -1, that's where I might fit them with a MySight or -1, but we'll talk about -1 later. But MySight is really great for that, okay? Sometimes kids don't feel comfortable sleeping at night, or they don't like the comfort of it, or maybe I have like a 16-year-old, you know, like ortho-K might not slow it down as much, so maybe I'll start with MySight. So those are kind of like my patients where I start MySight with.
Okay.
The drawback of MySight is that if you have sil, you know, it's hard to mask. So if you have more than a quarter, it's, I mean, like let's say you're -4, -1, still can get away with it, but if you're -4, -3, then you can't really fit that. So those are pros and cons.
Makes sense. Do you do do you prescribe atropine a fair amount, or not as much since you do lenses more?
So the great thing about ortho-K right now, we can never promise that we can stop the progression. It's like impossible. You'll be lying to your patients, but you can slow it down. If I do have some patients where I'm on another treatment, I don't use atropine as my first line treatment. I use it as my second line treatment. So if they're still progressing quickly, then I will start them on atropine.
Gotcha.
That's how I do it. But before options, I did start on atropine, but now we have different more options now. I usually use atropine as my second line.
Gotcha. And when you say second line, the first line didn't work, so you stopped using it and then you started atropine, or do they overlap at some points? Do you
I
double
usually
up?
Just overlap.
You just double them up?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And that's been a question that I've heard come up. You know, obviously if we know, you know, option A will decrease or potentially decrease progression X amount, option B will decrease it Y amount. What if you put them together? Would it increase it or improve the results significantly?
Oh, we're waiting for all those studies to come out. Gotcha. So yeah, they're doing a lot of those studies.
Got it. Good to know. Well, the last of those, the fourth option that you had mentioned was the MyoSmart lens from Hoya, which is an exciting new option. I wanted to dig into that a little bit and tell us, if you don't mind, MyoSmart is based on the DIMS technology. Would you be able to kind of elaborate a bit about what the DIMS technology is?
Yeah. So this lens, like, just to let you know, it just didn't come out last year or something. It's actually been out for a while. It's been out since like 2013, 2014. And so they were designed from Polytech University in Hong Kong. So the whole idea of myopia management is based on the I'm going to go a little bit technical. Hyperopic defocus and the peripheral myopic defocus.
You can go lots of technical, by the way. It's going to be, this conversation is going to be mostly ODs tuning in and wanting to learn. So go as technical as you want.
Okay. So the idea is that if you wear regular glasses or wear regular contact lenses, on the peripheral, you're going to get hyperopic defocus, which means that the focal point is behind the retina. And those send signals to the brain, and the brain will send a signal to the retina, and the eyeball will elongate. So every single time your prescription goes up, you get new glasses or contacts, it sends those signals again, over focus, and your eyeball will get longer and longer and longer. So the idea with Ortho-K is that your central vision is still clear, but your peripheral rays is actually in front of the retina. So now we don't send those signals. So that's how it slows it down. So DIMS technology try and mimics that. So instead of using an OK lens, you're actually using a lens. And they use these kind of little, I actually have a sample of it.
Oh, sweet. Great.
Look, it's really cool. Like, you can't really see it, but I'm not sure if you can see. Probably not. I thought you might be able to see it. But anyway, so the idea of the lens is that I'm one of those people that likes to show diagrams.
Oh, fantastic. Great. This is more than I was expecting. I hope you're watching. Anybody who's listening, make sure you go to YouTube and watch so Dr. Tung can give you some visual examples here.
So you can see that they have these little prism kind of peripheral blur.
Yeah.
So the center part you can see very clearly, but on the outside part, it causes that myopic defocus. So it moves that light to the front of the eye. Mm. So by doing that, it slows down the progression of myopia. So they did this course. Well, the reason why I'm so excited about it is because when I went to a conference and I started learning more about this lens, I was like, you know what? There's just patients that don't want to wear contacts, or they're too young, or they can't put it in. Like, you know, the only option is atropine at that time. Mm. So I was waiting for this lens, and by 2016, 2017, they actually released it in Asia, and they commercialized by Hoya. And it's like, and all the colleagues that were in Asia were like, oh my goodness, Sherman, this lens is working well. This actually works. I was like, okay, when's it gonna come to Canada? So almost every single month, I'll be like calling my rep, Hoya rep. Hey, is it here yet? Oh, it's coming in July. All right. Hey, is it here yet? Oh, there might be some delay. Hey, is it here yet? Oh, there's COVID,
Right. And then that happened, right?
So finally, it released around sometime in this year, August. And we're the, I know my rep was like, okay, fine. Here you go, Sherman. You have to do a course. You have to do a class to learn more about the lens. And then once you get certified, then you can sell the lens. So I've been using it since July. And, those patients that have been about 6 months, their progression is is a good alternative to kind of slow down the progression. So, and that's why I'm so excited about it.
Well, you said the lens came out a few years back in Asia, and they actually did some proper studies on the test. Well, as well as studies go, they did a 2-year clinical study, and it shows some pretty significant results. I think
why I love about that study was because it was randomized double mass study.
There you go. Okay.
So that's one of the reasons why I liked it. So there wasn't any bias. And then the study shows that it can slow down the myopia progression by 60% or 59%. Mm-hmm. But they also did something cool, is that they also look at the axial length. Right. So that's going to be the feature of myopia. You have to measure the axial length. And they also show that it can slow down by 60%. Now, everything has pros and everything has cons. So one of the things that with this study was the subject group. It is between 8 to 12 year old. Oh, 8 to 13 or 8 to 12, I forgot, sorry. For Asian patients. So, some can argue does it work for a different ethnicity? How about someone that's 14 or 15, does it work?
Right.
I mean, if it kind of works between them, you just kind of have to extrapolate the data and use your best clinical judgment. And I feel comfortable using someone that's under 8 or someone that's over 14, I'll still feel comfortable prescribing it.
Well, again, just by extrapolating and by using my personal clinical experience, that's the age group that tends to progress the fastest, in my experience, right? Is that sort of preteen, early teen years. But of course, I've had plenty of kids who are minus three by the time they're 5 years old. And, you know, trying to jump on that lately, up until now, my first line of treatment has been atropine, but definitely it's going to be changing significantly. And I'm doing that course to get certified in the MyoSmart lens actually this week. So I'm going to come back to you with more questions next week probably about this. What do you say? So someone like me who's trying to get more into myopia management, is the MyoSmart lens a good, easy kind of way to get into it? What's sort of like the benefits you'd say from a practitioner's perspective and the patient's perspective?
I think it is a good, each patient is a little bit different, right? Like, I mean, you have to ask about their lifestyle. If the child, doesn't play a lot of sports, stays at home, the lens might be a good option, okay? But if you start the lens off and let's say 6 months or 1 year, you do get some progression and it's like rapidly, then you might want to think about changing to okay lenses or a different type of method, right? Or you might want to add atropine too. So, I mean, is it a good starting point? Yes. If someone that doesn't want to go into okay lenses or doesn't want to go into my site or whatever other options, I think it is a good option. But just be wary. Don't think of it like, oh, this will solve all problems. And I think that's sometimes where doctors feel, oh, I feel comfortable. Like same thing, back to the glaucoma analogy. Like, hey, this person has glaucoma. I'm going to give them a prostaglandin and it's going to solve everything. Well, still keep an eye on it. Make sure you still follow them up every 3 months. Hey, how are you doing? Just check. If there's something that doesn't, not according to what you want, then you should be, maybe you might want to refer out to another colleague of yours that specializes in that, or call them up or ask for a second opinion.
Gotcha. So one of the topics that I find, and this is a lot of this question is coming from personal experience, but conversations with other colleagues, one of the challenges I have when it comes to specializing in something, and one of the things I've been working on kind of specializing a bit more is in dry eye over the last year or so. One of the most kind of the biggest hurdles is when I bring in something that's new technology, there's always a fee attached to it for the patient, talking about pricing, getting reimbursed adequately for the services that you're providing is so important when you're trying to specialize. Can you give some advice around, you don't have to talk about specific dollar amounts, but just advice around how do you, do you have pushback from people when you're trying to recommend specialty options? And how would you encourage someone, like me, who's trying to get into the area to overcome that barrier, that kind of mental barrier that I have to talking about price?
I mean, some patients might be put off by how expensive things are, or, how I approach it is a little bit different. So first thing is I'm providing a service that will solve your problem. If I can do that and, give you a plan and educate you what I'm going to be doing and where your value is going to be, then most of my patients will be agreeing to my services, right? They might question it, why is it so expensive, or but if you can take the time, educate them why we're doing this, how it'll benefit you, what I'm trying to achieve there, and they're kind of part of the process, usually they'll buy it. But if you go like, hey, this will help you, do it, this is the cost, no one's gonna buy into it. It's kind of like an investment, right? Like, you can invest up to get my eyes better, or invest and slow down the progression. Like, what is your plan? What are you going to do? And, some things might help, like, for example, you can show your qualification. So if you do a lot of the dry eye stuff, hey, I do dry eyes, I got certified here, this and this and this. Then, we have the latest technology. We'll show you what each equipment is, why we're doing it, how we're solving it. I think if you kind of sit down the time and kind of discuss that with them, then they'll appreciate it and they'll go somewhere else. Maybe if price is an issue, they might go somewhere else. Like, you know what, that doctor didn't address that. Or because usually you pay what you get, and a lot of patients understand that. So if you provide a great service and you believe in it and you educate your patients, I don't think you should think that price should be a hindrance. And if they decide not to, I wouldn't just lower your prices just because of that. You still have to believe in your own services.
I got you. Stick to your guns, kind of believe in what you're doing. I find that there's a disconnect between, I say it's $500 to get this treatment and it will make you better. And the person, feeling the results of that treatment. If once they feel the results of that treatment, if it worked the way you said, then they'll say, great, that $500 was worth it. But how do you get them to understand that that treatment is going to benefit them? And I guess education is really the key there. You know, and believing in what you're doing, I think is probably the biggest initial hurdle, right? And like believing that what you're actually doing is helping the patient, then you're going to be reimbursed adequately for it. I think that's one of the biggest, I'm going to just keep saying that because it's one of the biggest things that I've had to deal with over the last person, you know, 12 to 18 months is like being comfortable telling a patient that they're going to pay this fee for this service. And in the beginning, there were a lot of patients who were kind of like, forget that. But now as I've learned to kind of explain it to them a lot better and educate them more appropriately, you see that their reactions are very different on the whole, actually. So
I think one thing that really actually helped, I'm not sure if you do this. Do you have any brochures, stuff that's geared towards your branding?
Stuff with my branding? No, actually.
So I feel like if you use a lot of what, sometimes you use a lot of other, you know, like let's say I'm going to use Zydra, for example. You know, oh, here's a brochure, here you go. They're like, okay, well, this is Zydra's plan. This is not your plan. So things like, so this is why, like, if I list out all the different type of myopia management, like, hey, this one's for you. You know, this is why I'm not doing this one. This one is for you. You know, kind of customize, hey, your child is this prescription. This is where it can go towards, you know. So maybe you can do like a list of like dry eyes. Okay, here's the whole dry eye spectrum. This is where you are at. You know, what we're trying to do is try to get you from here to here. And so sometimes like that, that might help.
That's excellent. That's excellent. So do you have brochures or content like that printed out in your office that you hand like with your own branding on it?
Yeah. So with every single consultation, I will give them something to take home that's customized for them. So when that's they awesome. Take home, they understand that that plan was geared towards them. So if they do go price shopping, they'll go somewhere else. And that's what differentiate yourself, right? So if they go somewhere else, like, well, you didn't talk about this or you didn't talk about that. Like, where's the brochure that's cut, like my plan customized to me?
Right.
One kind of funny story was when I went to, this is the first time I ever went to Kiehl's this year. Okay. You guys know, have you ever stepped into Kiehl's? So you go in there and
I've been to Kiehl's. Yes.
So, you know, it's, they sell stuff, right? So here they go. Like, hey, let's do a skin test. I was like, what's a skin test? You go in there. They're like, let's do a customized skin test for you. And all they do is kind of take this litmus paper and they put it on your forehead or whatever for 5 seconds. And they're like, hey, let's match it. Oh, see, look, this matches. This is your skin. These are the products you need. And here I am. I was like, okay. Next thing you know, I stepped out. I spent like $150 or $200 worth of products. And my wife's like, yeah, that's great for you. I was like, okay. But, you know, I saw the value. Like, this product is made for me. And, you know, like, even if I go somewhere, like, oh, maybe I'll go buy from Body Shop. Maybe it's cheaper. But, hey, they might not have the same product or they might not be doing a skin test. So just something that's personalized, like, makes a big difference.
That is genius. That's excellent. And I think that's a really amazing thing that we could actually implement in our practices, like you've already been doing, right? So do a test, a legitimate test too. We're not just making something up here, right? We're legitimate test and then show the patient where they fall on the scale and then what the treatment is specific to them. That's awesome. Good job, Kiehl's. I want to go back to something that you mentioned earlier, just super briefly here about axial length. Do you have anything that measures axial length in your office right now?
So yeah, axial length is going to be the future. So if you're going to be like really into myopia management, the reason why is axial length will actually precede your prescription change. So sometimes that will change how you treat the patient. So let's say if I have a little kid, or let's say the parents are -7 each, and you see this 5-year-old kid and you're like, okay, they're plano, but what's their risk? And so you measure their eyeball length. And let's say, wow, I measured to be 25 or 26 millimeter. That's a very high number. Well, you know what? I might have to monitor this kid a little bit differently. I might have to, you know, maybe I can't wait 1 year. Maybe I'll have to see you back in 3 months. And if something happens, then I will start treatment earlier. So what I'm using right now is my OCT that can measure the axial length, but it's actually not very, very accurate. So this month, I am deciding between two different products to see which one I'm going to buy. But axial length machines are not cheap. They're about $30,000 for each one. But if it's something that, you know, I believe in and it it follows my vision statement, then I'm most likely to get it this month.
Exciting. Well, I'm gonna check back in with you on that too, because I'd love to hear about how useful that is in your practice, and maybe that's something I'll look at down the road for me as well. So I love this whole conversation. You know, we've covered a bunch of random, well, not random, but different topics, right? Your experience in the BCDO and giving back to the profession and the importance of that. Learning to specialize, or how to specialize, when to specialize, and then within that, you know, myopia management. We're going to talk about two completely different things here. The last two questions that I like to ask everyone at the end of the podcast are a little bit existential, some people have said. So just to prep you for that. Before we get to that, though, I want to just put out there, if people wanted to get in touch with you, what's the easiest way? You know, where can people find you? Where can people find your clinic? You know, what's the best place for everyone to go?
So I'm actually located in Kerrisdale, Vancouver. The best thing to do is just look up. You can follow me on follow us on Instagram at helloeyelab.com, or just go to our website to find more information.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. So the two questions, the first of the two, if we could hop in a time machine and go back to a moment where younger Sherman was struggling, whether it's financially, you know, mentally, school, whatever it is, you're going through a tough time. You could share that moment if you want to share exactly what was happening. But more importantly, I'd like you to share, what advice would you give yourself at that time?
Wow. That's probably be when I was in university. One of the things that I didn't feel like I kind of maximized my university years. Like, pretty much you go to school, you know, you try to get your best grades you can, and then you go to the next level, you know, professional school. One thing I kind of regret, or, you know, I never really did, was actually enjoy university. So, because all of our universities learn oneself, right? So I never really got, you know, there might be subliminally I learned about myself, but like there's not lessons that like, hey, you know, this situation, you know, it's not just about this test score, you know, like what can I take from this? And I think I read one of your blogs or something that just really resonated with me. It's like, you know, in school we learned, what was it, lessons to take a test, but then for the test, I actually saw it.
Yeah, so the quote was, in school you learn the lesson and then take the test, but in life you get tested and then have to learn the lesson.
So yeah, that's the part. So even though I was being tested outside, I didn't really took it and learned my lesson until years later. But that's where optometry came in, and that kind of filled in that gap to learn more about my, you know, even though optometry school for me was, I didn't find it that, I found it easier than undergrad, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree.
But that's where I kind of learned more about myself, like living in a different city, learn, you know, I think going back, it's just, I wish I took a little bit more opportunity. It could be a little bit wiser, you know?
You know what, Sherman, that's actually really, really good advice, man. You know, I'm not looking for any specific, you know, type of answer there. It really is what comes to mind. And if that's what comes to mind, that's great. And I think that's so important in undergrad. That is where you do really learn a lot about yourself, right? You go from high school, may not be comfortable for everybody, but it's a fairly comfortable environment in the sense of it's super safe, right? And, you know, when you go to university and things kind of expand, and it's a chance for you to meet new people and do different things. But when you move away, so you moved to Chicago, when I moved to Boston, same kind of thing happened. You realize that all these years you've lived in Vancouver, wherever you grew up, you've had a bubble of some sort. And when you move away, all of a sudden you're meeting completely different people from completely different places who do not think like you most of the time. So you are forced to learn, but it's beneficial if you can try to start that process in undergrad, like you're saying here. So
just to let you know, I have a lot of university students that volunteer for me. So I'll share some of my wisdom with them. So sometimes I'm like, come on in. Want to learn something about life today?
Here, come and listen to Uncle Sherman.
That's awesome. One of the fun things I like to do.
That story time with Uncle Sherman. I love it.
Yeah.
No, that's great advice. Okay, so the last question, Sherman, everything that you've done up until this point, everything you've built, you know, president of the BCDO, your practice, how much of this would you say is due to luck and how much is due to hard work?
For me, okay, because it could be different. What I believe in is that if you put your hard work into it, then opportunities will arise, and that's where you become lucky. Okay, so if you don't put in the hard work, you know, can't be really lucky. But at the same time, I know some people work so hard that they, you know, they don't get a break, right? So in my case, it's 50-50. Like, wow. A lot, for me, it's 50-50. I see an opportunity, or like I'm lucky to see that opportunity, and then I know that's the time when I need to work hard to seize that opportunity. So, but if I don't see that opportunity, then I won't really work very hard. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that's
so
cool.
But you have to be lucky to see those opportunities also. So that's where I feel like sometimes I'm lucky, you know, being the president, like, you know, it's just kind of that perfect timing where, you know, it kind of give you that luck to kind of get into it, right?
Yeah.
And then I can become president. Optometry school, you know, back then was very, very competitive to get into optometry school. Well, guess what happened? It was 9/11, and that's when, you know, enrollment was kind of down. So I was kind of lucky to get into. So you see, but if you didn't prepare, I didn't take my OET scores or whatever, then I wouldn't have been able, if I'm not prepared, I wouldn't be lucky to get in. So, right. So that's why.
50-50 I you know, that's great. Most people, just so you know, most people answer like, you know, it's all hard work, or it's 90% or 99%, whatever. And I know that hard work, it's impossible to get there without it, right? I think it's humble of you to really appreciate that and acknowledge that there's that luck involved. So that's cool.
Well, that's just for me, though, okay? So, I wouldn't use my advice, you know, like, oh, just 50% is luck. That's what Sherman said. I'm gonna wait for those signs. Like, don't, it's just what happened, reflect, because I just celebrated my 40th birthday and I kind of like thought about it. So I was like, so yeah.
Good. What did you do for your 40th? Anything fun?
I decided to postpone it till next year.
Fair, like everything else. Like everything else in 2020.
I'm going to be 39 for this year. I'll just do another year. You know,
That's perfect.
I'll celebrate my 40th birthday next year. You know, nobody will know.
That's all good, man. I'm sure everyone will be happy to still attend and celebrate with you, man. Sherman, any last words of wisdom? Any last things you want to share with us before we wrap up?
So as you kind of question, you know, asked me about, you know, being president, you know, I think the last thing that, you know, any future optometrist or, you know, current optometrist, you know, I've been around with all different type of optometry, you know, like corporate, you know, industry, you know, academia. You know, at the end of the day, we won't be able to practice what we want to do without our association. And they're the one that's always fighting for our rights, kind of like our union. And if we don't support them and invest in them, then our whole degree is kind of useless, you know? Mm-hmm. So be involved with your association, join your association, see what you can do, because the more optometrists that are part of your association, the stronger we are, and we have a louder voice.
Absolutely, hear. I could not agree more. I just to echo what you're saying, Sherman, almost, you know, I don't know what large percentage of all the opportunities that have come to me through the profession have come because of my connection to the association, either directly or indirectly, meeting people like yourself and so many other amazing optometrists. And on top of that, we don't have a profession unless we have someone advocating for our profession. And that's, our association, or, you know, whatever, you know, provincial or state society or association in the US as well. So make sure you get out there and be part of that. Make sure our voices are heard. Thank you so much, Sherman. I really appreciate you, you know, taking the time to share your wisdom, your expertise, and your insights, for staying late at work to do it as well. And a big thank you to everybody who has tuned in, whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, watching on YouTube or Spotify, whatever it is. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you leave a review. Let me know what you think. Give Sherman a shout if you have any questions about myopia control or pediatric optometry. I'm sure he'd be happy to help you as well. Thank you, guys. And we will see you again with another episode next week. Take care.